Good evening, everyone. My name is Corey Tuma. I am the Communications Director for Senator Patty Kim. We want to welcome and thank everyone for joining us for the conversation tonight. We're going to give folks just another minute to join us and get comfortable. Thank you again for taking the time for what we hope to be an informative and helpful dialogue. Just so you know, throughout the call, if you'd like to ask a question, you can do so by pressing *3 on your keypad at any time. So all you have to do is pull up the keypad, *3, and that'll afford you an opportunity to ask a question. We'll get to those later in the call, but for now, let me just give folks just another minute to join us. All right, let's get started. I have with me Senator Patty Kim.
Hi, everyone.
We're going to treat this conversation more similar to that of a podcast. I'm going to end up starting by asking Patty some of the questions that we get a lot, whether those are out in public or calls to our office. We'll start there, and then we'll eventually take some questions that may not have been covered. Additionally, we're really grateful to have Rich Riesinger with us from PennDOT. He's going to join us tonight to provide an update on some of our larger road projects happening in the area. He's going to provide that report right around 6:30, so please hang on the line so you can hear that update. We have a full agenda tonight, so let's get started. Patty, how are you?
I'm great, Corey, and I'm just really excited to have so many of you on the call tonight. Thank you so much for taking your time out on this evening. We don't do this a lot. This is actually my second time as a senator, so I hope it goes well. But again, thank you for joining us, everyone.
Good. I think a really nice place to start this conversation is to just remind people what the district looks like, what it includes.
Sure. So we are in Senate District 15. It has about 260,000 residents. And if you look at the map, it's basically the lower half of Dauphin County. So the northern part of the district is Middle Paxton Township and East Hanover Township, and then all of the great municipalities below just in Dauphin County. It is a really great district. I met so many of you, and I'm really, really proud to represent it.
Good. And so at this point, you've been our state senator for just over a year. I think people have asked this question, but wondering if you can just point to something that makes you feel accomplished, maybe a highlight, something you're especially proud of from the past year.
Sure. So kind of a personal thing in my family, there are three daughters. I'm the middle child, and unfortunately I fit every stereotype, good and bad. So growing up, I had, you know, a good relationship with my parents, and then I had a really good relationship with my sisters. At times, though, I had to be the mediator, you know, the go-between, or help one family understand the other family member. So when stepping into this role, I feel like I'm still playing that middle daughter role, but in my Senate district family. So, you know, with the help of my amazing team, we have helped and advocated for school districts, small and big businesses, directed dollars for public parks and infrastructure projects, and then on a day-to-day basis, just helping folks navigate the confusing and sometimes frustrating of state government. So what I find that's rewarding is first that people feel comfortable asking for our help, and then we work hard to find a compromise or a practical solution to their problem. We have many examples of that. I'm not going to list them here for you tonight, but I like to use our network and connections that I've built over the 20 years of public service that I've been in, and then, you know, not worry about who gets the credit and just help people. And I think that we need to make government work for all of us and do a better job. And that is what keeps me going in this sometimes crazy world of politics, Corey.
So here in this capital, in this crazy world of politics, Governor Shapiro just recently presented his budget proposal. Can you tell us a little bit what's in the budget and maybe how it's relevant to people who are less familiar with the process of passing a state budget? Can you just talk to us a little bit about it?
So, sure. So first of all, I support this budget proposal. It's just a draft, but I really like what's in it. It's balanced, and it's without a tax increase, first of all. And then when it comes to the priorities that I think are needed for the families in the district, I've come up with the three E's, just to make it easier to remember, the three E's, which are economic development, education, and economic empowerment. And I think the budget addresses the three areas and more. So let's start with economic development. I know that strong communities need good hospitals and great school districts, well-resourced first responders, and making sure our businesses are, you know, growing and healthy. And our district has, you know, many elements of this, but I want to build on what we have. So the governor has a new program called the Pennsylvania Program for Critical Infrastructure Investment, and it would invest billions of dollars into infrastructure projects across energy, housing, and school districts, as well as local government. And this will help Dauphin County create more jobs across the board while being able to catch up with the population growth of our region. The budget proposal continues to fund grants, things like for fire companies, nonprofits, municipalities. And in my view, you know, we don't need more grant money by way of raising taxes. I just want to get as much of that funding for my district as possible. So the money is there. Why not work really hard to get as many dollars back to us? And so I'm kind of competitive that way, but, you know, let's bring as much as we can to improve our district in Dauphin County. The next is E for education, and in the budget there are increases for K-12 public education. Some of you know that Pennsylvania has a court-ordered obligation to fix our unconstitutional education funding system. So for the past 2 years, we've successfully led the effort to meet that obligation. Now, one of my largest school districts, because of that new funding, can now offer full-day kindergarten. I am so excited for that, and I know the parents are because, you know, early education is so important for these 5- and 6-year-olds, and then it helps with working parents, you know, who are working and need a place for the kids to go all day. So really happy about that. So the budget proposes a $50 million increase for basic education and then a $50 million increase for special education. And this will help ensure that schools have the basic resources necessary to provide high-quality special education services to students with disabilities and special needs, which also includes kids with autism. I was at a roundtable for special education teachers, and I just sat there and listened to all of the challenges and their experiences, and these teachers work really hard, sometimes in difficult, you know, classroom settings, and I'm just so grateful, and I have so much respect for these teachers, and I want to make sure that they have the resources to continue what they're doing. There's a $35 million line item for student teacher stipends, which will be a $5 million increase from the last budget. We need more teachers, and one way to do that is to make sure it's easier and affordable for them to get their certificates. This is also another thing that I'm really happy to see. It's a way of mental health. You know, I keep hearing how college students and younger people are really struggling with mental health. I think it's a real problem. I applaud the other countries for limiting access to social media for young people. Australia, France, and Portugal are leading the way. That's not here yet in Pennsylvania, but it's just, I think, one way to help with our kiddos and their mental health. The budget proposes an increase of $65 million for mental health services in the Department of Human Services, and a couple of things that will help. $10 million to build capacity for 988 mental health crisis and suicide prevention hotline operations. Above that, $5 million will to help maintain mental health crisis stabilization centers, focusing on geographies with limited access to resources. And then the budget also will streamline the pathway for behavioral health clinicians to join insurance networks to give patients greater access to providers who meet their needs. And then finally, economic empowerment. I know that there are people who are working really hard, but it's just hard to make ends meet. The bills are, you know, harder to pay and send out every month. So, you know, one of the things that the governor proposes is raising the minimum wage. And I've been a proponent for that for the last, 13 years now. Pennsylvania has gone over 16 years without a minimum wage increase, while all surrounding states have raised their minimum wage. This puts our Commonwealth at an economic disadvantage when it comes to attracting workers and bringing in tax revenue. We are still at $7.25 an hour. Now, the budget calls for a $15 minimum wage for non-tipped workers and then $9 for tipped workers. There's something for child care. Here's a stat for you. According to the Office of Child Development and Early Learning, between May 2019 and May 2024, the total number of certified child care programs decreased by 700 programs, and the number of child care workers decreased by nearly 41%. So there is a program that helps to recruit and retain child care workers. So there's a $35 million proposed line item that would give these hardworking child care workers a bonus. The child care could give a up to a $450 retention bonus for them because it's competitive out there, and these folks could work anywhere for more money. So we are trying to keep them as we need good child care workers. And finally, Governor Shapiro's proposed budget, again, includes the Child Independent Care Tax Credit, the Employer Child Care Contribution Tax Credit, and the Earned Income Tax Credit, which mirrors the federal EITC. So what are the next steps? Next week, we will start the Senate Appropriations hearing. I serve as the Vice Chair of the Senate Minority Appropriations Committee, and I'll be at these meetings and be ready to probe the heads of departments to see how they're spending the money and how the budget proposal will work for them. I know many of you are probably wondering if we're going to get an on-time budget this year. Oh, my goodness. I hear it. I hear it all the time. The short answer is that everyone, including myself, are highly motivated to do so. During the budget impasse, there was unnecessary pain and waste of money for school districts, local governments, and nonprofits and other groups that had to go without payment from the state and then borrow money and pay interest. We cannot do that again. Some encouraging news, the governor and the four caucus leaders met right after the budget address to get conversations going. You know, those conversations don't usually happen until June, so I think we're off to a better start. Fingers crossed, we're going to work really hard on that. Lori?
Good, thank you. If you have recently just joined this call and have a question that you'd like to ask, it's really simple. You just pull up your keypad and you press *3. And that's at any point in this call, you're able to just press *3, and you can ask a question that then Patty will get to shortly. We'll do that soon, but we actually wanted to start with a couple poll questions. The poll questions are going to help Patty know what your top priorities are. If you're actually interested in finding out the results, they will be included in our upcoming electronic newsletter, which we send out about twice a month. You can subscribe by visiting our website. Say this twice if you just want to write it down. It's pasenatorkim.com. That's pasenatorkim.com. Once you get to the website, you just scroll down until you reach a box that reads sign up for newsletters. Like I said, those are about twice a month, including a lot of information about what's happening in the district and resources and events. So let's get to the first poll question. It's going to be simple. I'll ask the question and then invite you to answer using your keypad. So I'll give you a moment. If you want to pull up your keypad, there's no obligation to participate, but we would be grateful to know what you're thinking. So I'll read through the question twice. And like I said, we'll ask a couple throughout the call, starting with the following question. Which of the following policy issues are most important to you? For housing, press 1. For affordability, press 2. For crime reduction, press 3. For data centers, press 4. And for the job market, press 5. I'm going to repeat that all again. Which of the following policy issues are most important to you? For housing, press 1. For affordability, press 2. For crime reduction, press 3. For data centers, press 4, and for the job market, press 5. Thank you. Just as a reminder, again, if you've just joined us, star 3. If you press star 3 on your keypad, at any time you're going to be able to ask a question, which we'll get to shortly. The first question, though, I'm going to start with is going to be one that came in as people registered for the call. They were invited to ask questions if they felt led, and so I'm going to start with one that came in that way. The first question is one that our office has been getting a lot of calls about recently. We discuss as a staff regularly. Mark from Derry Township asked the following question. We're seeing a lot of data centers being built in our state, and we hear both good and bad things about them. From your perspective, how should we balance the economic benefits they bring with the other concerns like energy and water use that impact our communities? So, Maddie, first question of the night.
Yeah, this is a common question that we get in our office, and for good reason, because when it comes to innovation, there's no sector of our country's economy that's growing faster than data centers and our artificial intelligence. So we are seeing dozens of new proposals or planned facilities ranking the state among the fastest growing state for AI and data centers. I don't think we should be proud of that. Pennsylvania is home to about 40 data centers. And there are about 25 proposed data centers across the Commonwealth. We just checked from the Pennsylvania Data Center Proposal Tracker with that information. Most active and proposed data centers are in eastern and western Pennsylvania. But a number are under development here in central PA, specifically York, Cumberland, and Lancaster counties. There are a number of uncertainties when it comes to data centers, meaning we need to be selective about the projects that get built here. I've heard concerns, again, through letters and phone calls about these data centers and the impact that they could have on our communities, our energy bills, and our environment. I'm a proponent of local government remain in control and update local ordinances that best meet the needs of the district. In Pennsylvania, townships, boroughs, and counties traditionally control zoning and land use decisions. In the governor's budget address, he announced the governor's responsible infrastructure development, GRID for short, standards, which I think is a great idea, developed in consultation with the community to hold data center developers accountable to strict standards if they want our full support. So this is how it would work. First, developers must commit to bringing their own power generation or paying entirely for the new generation loan needs and not passing it on to homeowners and businesses with added costs because of the development. You don't want to pay for that. Second, developers must commit to strict transparency standards and direct community engagement. Local communities cannot be left in the dark about who is coming and what they're building. We need to know. Third, these projects need to hire and train local workers. We want our own folks working on these projects. They need to enter into community benefit agreements that fund important local priorities and support the towns that host them. Fourth, they must commit to the highest standards of environmental protection, especially water conservation. We've been getting some calls about House Bill 2151, which would direct municipalities to regulate data centers and adopt local ordinances to limit harmful impacts on nearby communities. These ordinances would include provisions for sound barriers, setback distances, building design standards, equipment modification, and other measures to reduce community disruptions. This bill was referred to the House Energy Committee back in January, where it is. As you know, as a state senator, I can't vote on the bill unless it comes to the Senate, but addressing issues around data centers is uncharted territory. I believe regulations need to be done in a smart, strategic, and safe way. Please be assured that I am reviewing all relevant legislation and regulations to advocate effectively for my constituents.
Good. So our next poll question follows that conversation well. Again, if you're interested in participating, this is two of three questions we're going to ask. I'll ask the question, and you can just respond on your keypad. The second poll question is, do you support the construction of AI data centers near where you live? For support, you can press 1. For oppose, press 2. For no opinion, press 3. Again, I'll read that question one more time. Do you support the construction of AI data centers near where you live? For support, press 1. For oppose, press 2. And for no opinion, you can press 3. A reminder, apologies if you're tired of hearing it. If you want to ask a question, you can press star 3 at any time. I'm going to ask one more question, though, that came in as folks were registering for the town hall. We have a question, again, that is a popular one we've heard a lot. Jen from Harrisburg asked, immigration is obviously a federal issue, but it affects our communities locally in very real ways, in our schools, hospitals, housing, and jobs. What specific steps can our state take? Ready?
Yeah, Corey. You and I and the entire office, we've had many conversations about this. You know, what we saw in Minneapolis was horrifying. I was angered at the overreach and aggression displayed by federal agents. It was really, really hard to watch and digest what was going on. These kind of incidents, you know, strain our communities. They widen divides at a time when, you know, we should be working together and strengthening trust with each other. The Constitution of the United States places clear limits on government power, and I believe the recent events violate many of these guaranteed fundamental protections. Regardless of one's immigration status, there are guaranteed rights under the Constitution, like equal protection, due process, right to remain silent, right to privacy. Unfortunately, regarding direct oversight of ICE as a state senator, my authority is limited, and ICE falls under the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which is the jurisdiction of the federal government. I take the safety of individuals in our communities very seriously, which is why I've co-sponsored several proposals to protect Pennsylvanians from unlawful immigration enforcement tactics. These proposals include, and there are four of them, and I'll go over them pretty quickly. Senate Bill 1071 would establish clear visual identification protocols for law enforcement officers, which includes ID, that includes the name, badge number, department of agency, as well as prohibition on masking. My colleague Senator Haywood has a proposal to criminalize indiscriminate tactics of arrest and detainment by law enforcement acting within Pennsylvania. Senator Cappelletti's proposal is to prevent civil immigration arrests by federal immigration authorities or within 1,000 feet of Commonwealth-owned or leased facilities unless supported by a judicial warrant or judicial order. So these folks can go into, you know, the Capitol, to the county administration building without fear of being picked up. Senator Collette's proposed Senate resolution affirms that the rights guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and the Pennsylvania Constitution apply to all persons within the Commonwealth and condemn incidents involving the use of deadly force by federal immigration enforcement officers. So those are the ones that I've co-sponsored. Governor Shapiro has publicly shared that multiple Pennsylvania cities will be prepared for a large-scale ICE operation in case it happens, like the ones in Minnesota. I stand ready to help and do my part, as well as a state senator.
So we're going to move into taking some questions. I made promises that Rich from PennDOT is going to share in just a couple minutes, but I think we'll take just a couple questions before that happens. So to start, I'm going to invite Maddie from Harrisburg to join us. Maddie, can you hear us?
I can. Good evening, Senator Kim and Corey.
Hey, Maddie. So thanks for joining us today. What's your question?
So I just wanted to start and say that I appreciate hearing all the valuable information you all have shared so far. Again, like Corey said, my name is Maddie, born and raised in Harrisburg, and I recently graduated from a college in Pennsylvania. But while in school, many of my peers expressed that they did not necessarily feel motivated to put effort into voting. And this ranged from both out-of-state students and in-state students either not casting a mail-in ballot or going to vote at their local polling location. And so a common denominator that I saw when speaking to my peers is that they felt fatigued. and that their vote doesn't count. So to me, as a person who understands the importance of even having the right to vote, is a scary reality. So my question is, what encouragement and reminders would you give to students and young adults when it comes to exercising the right to vote? What is lost when students aren't voting?
Thank you, Maddie, for that question. Congratulations on your recent graduation. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So that is a big problem. I think a lot of young folks will see things on social media, and it is overwhelming. Sometimes they don't know what's right and what's false. And so what I can do under my control is to go out and talk to students. I need to help, first of all, humanize politicians. I like to call ourselves elected officials, but demystify, talk to them, realize that I'm a real person and that, you know, we're trying to work for our communities. So last night I was at the Boys and Girls Club in Harrisburg and talked to students. They were athletes, but just talking about the importance of getting involved and getting engaged. I think it's very overwhelming to think, like, where would I even start? And so what my office does is that we have internships. We have shadow days, and we just talk to as many young people as possible to share what we actually do. And a way that we can also get people interested is that to show bipartisan support. I am so grateful for my district in Dauphin County. You know, I have 3 Democrats and state reps and 2 Republican state reps, and we all genuinely like each other. We work together and we get things done for Dauphin County. And it is something I wish more people would see. But people are so sick of us fighting. They're so sick of us bickering and having these, you know, viral sound bites. It's not helping anybody. It's not healing us. It's not bringing everyone together. And so I want students to see more of the good things that's happening. I want them to get involved and not be in despair, because that's really, really sad. And I was talking earlier about the mental health. I think a lot of this is just too much, and I want our students to flourish and thrive, and it breaks my heart that some of them are just, you know, really overwhelmed and feeling depressed about everything. So I guess that's my answer to Maddie. Thank you for your question.
Thank you for the answer.
I think we're going to get to one more question before we talk to PennDOT. So let me bring on our next caller, Monique. Are you able to hear us, Monique?
I can. Can you hear me?
Hi, Monique. What's your question tonight?
Hi. I personally, 3 years ago, and I still am in a housing, holistic housing crisis, and I want to know, as a person that resides in the city of Harrisburg and has, I've worked for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I want to know, what can I do, who can I connect with that's, like, at the level of government, like city, state, and county? And I really want to do something or be a part of something that can help people, so that they don't have to go through what I and many people went through in this hellacious housing crisis that I was in. So I really didn't hear from the people that I thought I would hear from, and I kind of had to, like, pick and choose and figure out for myself as far as where to find, like, temporary housing until I can find something that was suitable as what I had before the circumstance had happened. So, yeah, I want to be a part of something bigger. That's what I want to do.
Monique, thank you. And I know we've spoken to you before. So today we are talking about the budget and what's in the budget. And Governor Shapiro, as well as myself, understand the crisis that we're having with housing. There's just not enough. And so there's not competitive. I think there are property owners or landowners with apartment buildings, you know, they keep raising the prices, and then the renters don't have a lot of options to go to. So what is transformational in this budget is the $1 billion investment for more housing. The governor has put together proposing a new department within DCD to focus on housing. And if we can get more houses up and built, again, creating more jobs and giving homeowners and renters more options, we can force the price to go down because there's just more supply. The demand is very high, but we don't have enough homes to fulfill the needs of our Pennsylvanians. So I am hoping that that happens. That's why I support the budget. We'll be having our hearings and talking about it and asking Secretary Rick Steiger of DCD more about this, because I find it very exciting because we just need more housing. So I appreciate that question, and I think we are out of time and we need to get to PennDOT.
Thank you.
So it's just a couple minutes after 6:30, and as promised, I'd like to invite Rich Reisinger. He's the Assistant District Executive at PennDOT, and he's going to provide us with a bit of an update on some of our larger road projects happening in the area. Rich, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, thank you, Corey and Senator Kim, for giving me the opportunity to update the attendees on several of our significant projects happening in the Harrisburg area. As mentioned, I'm Rich Reisinger, and I serve as an assistant district executive in charge of design for activities in the PennDOT Engineering District 8, which covers the greater Harrisburg area. The first project I want to cover is, I'll say, the main I-83 Capital Beltway Improvement Projects. This corridor-long initiative extends from Interstate 81 on the north to the Susquehanna River on the southern end, with the goal to reconstruct and modernize the interstate with three main travel lanes in each direction, including additional lanes to connect ramp locations and create a collector-distributor type roadway system layout in specific areas of high traffic demand. Overall, the corridor was broken into three separate focus areas, with Section 1 being I-81 to Union Deposit, which has been completed. Section 2 is the general Eisenhower interchange area with the connections to I-283 and 322. And then Section 3 is roughly from the 29th Street overhead bridge crossing to the river, which is the section that is currently active in construction. The Section 3 project, as I mentioned, that's in construction, was broken into two separate construction contracts. The first contract was started in the fall of 2023. And is expected to be completed in late 2027. Last year, for anyone who traveled through the corridor routinely, you know that we rebuilt the 29th Street Bridge and opened that. The 19th Street Bridge was recently demolished, and construction activities are ongoing to build a new bridge crossing Interstate 83 in that location. The second construction contract in that area was awarded last fall, and will include work to upgrade the 17th Street interchange, the 13th Street bridge over Interstate 83, and the adjusted Paxton Street alignment between 13th Street and 17th Street. This contract, as I mentioned, was just awarded. The contractor is just gearing up to really get started here this spring, and then that will run through about 2033. Section 2, so I'll go backwards a little bit here, but Section 2 is the Eisenhower interchange area. So we don't have any active construction there yet. We're still in design. But that project will be broken into five separate construction contracts. The first planned project is expected to begin in early 2028. And that first project will focus on making improvements on the road network off of the interstate to make traffic improvements on more of the local road type connections. And that will include reconnecting 40th Street with a new bridge over Interstate 83. On the east side of the interchange, it will extend Paxton Street from its current dead-end location around Penhard Drive. It will carry it over the Norfolk Southern Railroad tracks and connect it at a new intersection across from East Park Drive. This first phase will also build out a new exit configuration for Paxton Street by the old Harrisburg Mall location, which will allow for exiting and entering Interstate 83 in both north and southbound directions. Then the remaining four construction contracts at the Eisenhower Interchange will then proceed about 2 years apart and carry through the late 2030s until the full interchange is reconstructed and fully built out. Next, I want to provide an update on the South Bridge. This project is the full replacement of the South Bridge, including the viaduct, which the viaduct structure is the structure that runs from the riverbank in Harrisburg to about the Cameron Street exit location. And the Southbridge project also includes work in Cumberland County to adjust the Lemoyne and New Cumberland exit and replace the 3rd Street Bridge over in that location. In the summer of 2024, PennDOT was fortunate to receive a $500 million federal grant from the Federal Highway Administration to assist with funding this project. We are actively working in final design. We're acquiring right-of-way, getting all of our DEP permitting requirements addressed, coordinating with the railroads, and are planning to advertise for contractors later this summer. Now, this is expected to be the largest contract to be bid by PennDOT up until this point across the state, with an expected construction value of over $1 billion. There's roughly an 8-year total construction timeline, and the new South Bridge structure will accommodate 5 lanes in each direction with ample inside and outside shoulder widths in addition. The last projects I wanted to cover are the Market Street bridges, and I say bridges because they are, while we are delivering those as one project, they are 2 separate bridge structures. So the bridge from Cumberland County on the west shore to City Island is a structure that requires what's called a superstructure replacement. So that's where we need to replace everything from the piers in the river up to the roadway surface and everything above. And then the bridge from City Island into Greater City Harrisburg is a historic arch structure that will be rehabilitated. To facilitate those projects on the bridges, we are planning to construct an adjacent utility bridge that will allow the utilities to move off of the current bridges. And then once the utilities are moved onto that bridge, it will have a deck surface placed on it, and then it will be used as a bicycle pedestrian facility for long-term pedestrian usage for anyone using the City Island, Harrisburg, and West Shore connections. We plan to bid this project in early 2027, with the first 2 construction seasons planned to be construction of the utility bridge and allowing the utilities time to move off of the current bridges onto the utility bridge. And then there'll be about 4 construction seasons worth of work on the roadway bridges. This work will require directional detours that will shift during construction phases. And as those phases start getting closer and get into construction, we will be putting out press releases and making notifications on what traffic control will be implemented and what phasing and timelines they will be. For all of these projects and any other projects and updates on those, information can be found on the department's website through www.pa.gov. Navigate to the Department of Transportation and then click on the box that says projects near you. And there's an interactive map that you can navigate to any county in the state and look at the projects. The project information is there. There's usually graphics showing what the project is, some high-level plans, and then also contact information for our project managers and design team officials that can reach back out and answer any specific questions that anyone would have. And to wrap up, I would like to remind attendees to please be alert when traveling through our work zones, paying particular attention to construction signage and posted speed limits, as we want to make sure that our road users, employees, and contractors go home safely at the end of each workday. And with that, once again, I want to thank Senator Kim for giving me the opportunity to speak this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich, so much. All of the construction, which is all positive, it affects us every day as drivers, and I really liked your important notice to watch out for construction workers out there. We did pass a cell phone ban while driving, and let's keep our phones down and have everyone go home safely. So, Rich, thank you so much. Appreciate all that you do.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it, and thank you for the cell phone plug. We certainly appreciate that as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Thank you for that. We're going to keep the conversation going. We have Matthew on the phone. Matthew's from Hershey. Can you hear us, Matthew?
Hi. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, Matthew. How are you?
Hi. Good evening. Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Actually, I have two questions. The first one, and they're totally unrelated. The first one has to do with what actions can be taken to enhance protections of children, including cyberbullying. That's the first question. And the second question is pertains to what can be done to assist senior citizens with relief on their real estate taxes. And again, thank you and your team and everyone else for offering this opportunity tonight. Bye.
Absolutely, Matthew. Thank you for those two important questions. The first about protecting students with cyberbullying. That is definitely an issue. I know I've spoken with superintendents who deal with the fights, whether it be physical after cyberbullying, to just kids enduring really mean things back and forth on social media. What the legislature just did in the Senate, rather, is that we passed a bell-to-bell cell phone ban in schools. Other school districts already have that, where kids have to turn in their phones. But we passed it in the Senate. I believe it's going to the House. The governor said he will support this. But that is going to be incredibly helpful. I know that in Susquehanna Township, they have had this ban before the state law, and they have seen a reduction in fights. Like, it was noticeably different when the kids don't use their cell phones in class. That's where the 99% of the fights originate, is from social media posts, direct messages, whatever. So I think that's going to be helpful in protecting our students. And then assisting with property taxes, especially with seniors. I know that this is an issue that the General Assembly has been working on. There have been numerous bills that tried to get passed. The problem is that once you either eliminate or reduce property taxes, we need to fill that gap, and nobody has an appetite to raise, let's say, the sales tax or any other taxes to fill that. Sounds like a terrible excuse, but if you create a hole in the budget, you have to fill it, and we have not found that solution. We are very lucky to have the property tax rent rebate program, which was expanded. It's about $250 million of gaming and lottery funds that go for relief for folks who are maybe disabled or who make $45,000 or less. We had just increased the threshold. It hadn't been increased since 2006. We did that a couple years ago so that we were able to have more people eligible for this. You can get about $1,000 back if you're a homeowner or renter if you meet some certain qualifications. Our office right now is helping folks fill out the forms. You can do it online. They streamline the process. It's a lot easier now, but we encourage you to see if you're qualified. $45,000 or less, if you make that, you get some kind of rent rebate. This is not helpful to a lot of people. It helps a portion of people, but we are still working on finding relief for senior citizens as they don't send kids to schools, but, you know, are saddled with these taxes. Matthew, thank you so much for those two important questions.
I think we have a question here from Maria from Harrisburg. Maria, are you able to hear us?
I can hear you great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can.
Okay, wonderful. This has been terrific. Thank you so much, Corey, and thank you, Senator, for this wonderful opportunity. My question is this. I'm really concerned about single moms in our area and them getting help for things like diapers and formula and baby clothes. And I know that the state took away funding a couple of years ago, and my question is, what is the senator doing to try to help those single moms?
Sure, Maria. I appreciate your thoughtfulness in thinking about this population that I know struggle, especially with rising prices and energy costs and whatnot. They're just getting squeezed every day. The thing that I felt was most helpful for folks who are struggling and not making ends meet is the passage of the Earned Income Tax Credit. We started that last year. It affects about 1 million people in Pennsylvania. It mirrors the federal Earned Income Tax Credit. So if you qualify federally, you will get a percentage of that from the state level. And that will put more money back into the pockets of these moms who need extra help. We were talking about the rent rebate. If they're homeowners or even renters, they can get some money back as well. Maria, if you call our office, we have some nonprofits that help with supplies that we can be helpful with, if you know anyone in particular. But, yeah, those are the two main state-related bills and laws that we passed to help with this, and also with the child care tax credit as well. So thank you, Maria, for those, that question.
Good. We have Molly here from Harrisburg on the line. Molly, do you hear us? Molly from Harrisburg?
Hold on. We can on to hand. Okay, can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
Perfect, perfect. Actually, I was just on my way to church, so this will be fast. it's Ash Wednesday. I'm on my way to church. So, as I've watched and read about the destruction of the federal Department of Education, I'm particularly concerned about the impact on funding for special education. And Senator Kim, I know you mentioned very early in this call, you know, some funding for special ed, but how will the changes at the federal level, particularly in terms of funding, affect the availability of funds in Pennsylvania to support the growing needs for quality special education?
Thank you, Molly. And I know you're off to church, and happy Lent. We don't know the full effects. I spoke to a couple of superintendents about what the effects are from the cuts from at the federal level, and they are haven't seen anything concrete yet. But again, at the state level that we can control, the increase for special education will go for more supports for students. I know that one school district, specifically Central Dauphin in our in the 15th school district, they just added 10 classrooms for students with autism. That number is rising. I feel like it's almost explosive in the number of students. And so they're increasing teachers and support for those students. And just, again, just having to find more space in their classrooms. So that money, the $50 million increase, will go in that direction and hopefully be helpful. That we could use a lot more, and some of our teachers are leaving. We need to retain them and make sure that they're getting compensated for the work that they do. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. So I think we're nearing the end of our telephone town hall. We want to be really considerate of people's time. We'll mention at the end, if you weren't able to ask your question live, there will be an opportunity to leave your question on a voicemail, and someone from our office will be able to get back to you. But there are a number of questions here in the queue asking about the same thing. They're asking about downtown revitalization efforts. They've heard some things in the news. They have questions for what this means for Harrisburg and the greater Harrisburg area. So if you can answer, Patty, more generically, like what about downtown revitalization can you share with us?
Sure. This is a project that we are really focusing on because it really needs a lot of help. And what was most time-consuming was just to get all the parties together in terms of, you know, at the state level, my colleagues in the House are on board. The mayor of Harrisburg is also on board. And then the real help was with Governor Shapiro. I reached out to him, and he responded really quickly saying, yes, yes, we want to help. What can we do? Let's get a plan going. So we have, as well as the local chamber, CREDIC, with Ryan Unger, also helping us. Downtown Improvement District is also helping us, as well as PA Downtown Center. So we have all the right players. And what we're doing right now is to get a survey out. There's a survey online, hbgsurvey.com. And we're going to hear from everybody, residents and surrounding folks around the area, about what they see in Harrisburg, downtown rather. You know, do you feel safe? You know, is parking an issue? What is your overall perception of Harrisburg? And once we get that data, we are going to go out and get a planner to put together a plan. We want input with this plan, with residents, with business owners alike. We're going to do this differently this time around, because back in 2000, when Restaurant Row, so to speak, was just booming and bursting with energy, you know, things have changed. The way people eat in restaurants, their habits have changed. There are less state workers downtown. Our parking is too expensive. So we need to deal with all these issues and reimagine the city into what residents can go to, not just the lobbyists and politicians on session days, but how can we bring the families back downtown, make it affordable, something fun for everyone. So even though this is a monumental task, it is so exciting to me to see how we can get things from feedback from everybody in this area, how we can improve it and make it something that we can be really proud of. So my office is working on that almost every day, because it's going to take a lot of work, but I think it's going to be impactful, and it's going to really help our capital city grow. Downtown is kind of like the front porch of the capital, and we want it to be as best as we can make it. So that's what we're working on, and we're really excited.
Good. I'm also looking at a couple questions and thought to just take a minute and remind people about our district office. And so it opened mid last year, and it's at 716 Colonial Road, which is not far from the Colonial Park Mall there in Lower Paxton Township. Our constituent services staff are there Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, to help navigate state agencies and resources. And so there's a couple people asking about a number of programs. Please come in. Please give us a call. We can help you submit applications online, things like property tax rent rebate applications, similarly unemployment compensation, PENI, LIHEAP. I know maybe not everyone is familiar with these, LIHEAP, low-income home energy assistance program, and then additional assistance programs like DHS, SNAP, and CHIP. So if we can help you with that, we would love to do that. You can give our district office a call. The number, if you want to write it down, is 717-346-6278. We would welcome you at any time. Otherwise, I'm going to ask one final poll question. Again, these are just really helpful so that Patty knows best how to serve our district. And so if you want to pull up your keypad and participate, one last question, fairly straightforward. She talked about it earlier. Do you support an increase in the minimum wage? For yes, you can press 1. For no, you can press 2. And for no opinion, you can press 3. I'll read it one more time. Do you support an increase in the minimum wage? For 1, you can press yes. For yes, you can press 1. For no, you can press 2. And for no opinion, press 3.
All right, Corey, thank you so much for being with me. Corey, this made it so much easier to talk to somebody instead of being in my office talking to the wall. So that was really helpful. I want to thank Luke, who's also on the line, Abraham, and Dante and Yanira, who are also helping us out tonight. Thank you for my amazing team. Thank you for listening and asking really great questions. I like to be approachable. We take meetings in person over the phone. But let's stay in touch, because if I know what's important to you, I'm a better state senator for this district. So everybody, I hope you have a safe, good evening. Thank you for joining us, and I hope to see you around town. Thanks, everyone.